Hello, I'm Veronica Scaresbrick. Thanks for joining me. On the very first year of his pontificate, Pope Benedict celebrated his birthday on Easter Sunday, as the crowds gathered around him well knew. Let's listen for a moment.
Hey, Papa! Happy birthday, Papa! Happy birthday, Papa!
A year on, his birthday may no longer coincide with Easter, but it's an important birthday to remember, his 80th. Let's listen as the abbot primate of the Order of St. Benedict, not Karl Wolf, a fellow Bavarian, wishes him all the best for the occasion. What would be your birthday message to him?
Of course, I should like that he continue the identity of the Catholic Church so that people may realize that this church is the Church of Jesus Christ, that it's our tradition we are going on, and that he may have the wisdom always to find the right words for that.
The exact date, as we know, is the 16th of April, just days ahead of celebrations for the second anniversary of his election to the See of Peter. 2 years as Pope, then. So I thought, why not ask the abbot to comment? After all, in a sense, as the highest-ranking Benedictine in the world, he answers directly to the Pope.
The Pope doesn't do it directly, but he has the Congregation for Religious. That means one of his ministries in charge of religious people, and that's my immediate superior, I would say, the prefect there.
My first question was an inevitable one. Pope Benedict had a very difficult task to begin with because he had to step into the shoes of a man who had been Pope for over a quarter of a century. That's quite a feat for anybody. How has Pope Benedict, in your view, dealt with this? Has he managed to step away from a particular style of papacy, actually, which Pope John Paul created?
I think there has never been the intention of Benedict XVI to step away from John Paul II, but he just wants to continue the tradition of the Church, to strengthen the Church all over the world. But by his nature, by his character, he has a different style. First of all, he is not the man of big shows, and he doesn't give private audiences. On the other hand, when he appears in public, like in Bavaria and also in Turkey, where I had been commenting in the TV in both cases, he appeared as a simple, humble man. And I think that's one of his strengths. So people were afraid of him before he became Pope, because, of course, he was kind of watchdog of the Catholic faith. But now he has turned out to be the great pastoral minister to the Church. And I think that's something very special. And he doesn't do it so much with his personality, but with his whole love for the Church and for the people. He tries to direct the whole Church again more and more towards Jesus Christ, towards sincere liturgy, also sincere dialogue. He has waked up also Europe in this regard.
He outlined three things in his first speech. One was his intention to follow along the path that was set by Vatican II. The second was a focus on ecumenism, and the third on young people. Do you think he's kept to that?
For young people, yes, we could see it on Palm Sunday or also in Cologne. Ecumenism, a bit different than, for example, the Germans had thought, because it's not so much ecumenism with the Protestant churches, but he opens up the Church towards the Orthodox churches. And he said they have been forgotten, and they are far closer in their faith to the Catholic Church. And we should have a very close contact with them and try to find some unity. And also for another reason, looking at Europe, the Orthodox churches are the eastern part of Europe, practically. And if we want to unite Europe, we have to see them. And I know also from Orthodox publicities, from the internet, for example, that they are now also afraid that secularism, relativism takes over in Europe. Exactly that, what the Pope was criticizing right in the beginning, especially during his talk at the beginning of the conclave. And so I think with regard to the Eastern churches, there is are quite some possibilities. Also because of the nationality, I'm sure that it's natural. We have our human feelings. I'm sure that the Russian Orthodox, for example, and also the Greek Orthodox somehow, were afraid of John Paul II because he was Polish. And he was such a strong character. Whereas Benedict XVI, he is a simple, humble man. There is no reason why people should be afraid of him.
I don't think he's so simple. I mean, he's a university professor, he's an academic.
Yeah, you could see it, especially in Regensburg, for example, but he's doing like his post-synodal document, Sacramentum Caritatis, the sacrament of love. It's a kind of catechesis. We had already a document on Eucharist by John Paul II, which was more devotional, meditative character, whereas this one is really like a catechism, where you can study things. There you can feel the professor who is behind these documents. But also in some other way, he is not just the intellectual or the high intellectual man. He doesn't show it like that, but he uses a language which people can and may understand. So he's not coming into the room, starting a high-class lecture, but he's talking to people during the audiences at the Angelus. He's talking in a simple, positive way, simple language, which people can understand. And people are amazed about this new language of his.
During his catechesis, he goes back to the apostles and then to the fathers of the church. Why do you think he does that?
Yeah, of course, he goes back very much to St. Augustine. He has studied St. Augustine very much. I would say very much formed by St. Augustine, by the whole mentality. And of course, St. Augustine was a great theologian, and he has had a big influence to the whole Western theology. He also mentions St. Benedict, where he says nothing should be preferred to the divine office, to the office to the Lord, to God, or to Jesus Christ. That's also a quotation from St. Benedict.
It's your Benedictine Pope, then?
Somehow, I would say, because he has done his private retreat every year for 20 years, every year in a Benedictine monastery in Bavaria.
You mentioned Bavaria. Do you think he's more of a German pope or an European pope?
I think he is the pope of the church. I don't see him so much as a German pope under national feelings. To be Bavarian, this gives a little local touch to him. But even that has nothing to do with, I would say, nationalism, but it shows simply that also he has got his human roots. And European, I don't know if we have European citizens at all. But
as an idea, I think there is a European culture as such.
Yeah, I would say the cultures, in plural, of Europe have been profoundly formed by Christianity, also the Eastern European cultures. It's a kind of stepping into the traditional cultures Christianity found here, the Christians found in, like St. Augustine. He had studied rhetorics, Latin rhetorics. He was a brilliant student, and at a sudden those people were converted, or converted themselves to Jesus Christ and were baptized, they brought in the whole heritage of the Greek and Roman mentality, of the philosophy, and by this they created a real Western theology, because they had first also their whole philosophical training. And later on, the monks were in science, in agriculture, in arts, in all kind of trades. They did so much for the European culture. Wherever they had been, maybe in Italy, in the Italian culture, in the French culture, and in the German culture, and also the English culture, and Spanish one. Everywhere, monks are at the roots of these cultures. In this way, we can may say we have a common European Christian culture. And if you think of the Middle Ages, isn't that something that a man like Saint Anselm, the patron saint of Saint Anselmo, of my place here, he was born in Piemont in northern Italy. He grew up in Burgund, in Cluny. He got his the whole schooling there, and joined the monastery in the Normandy, in the northwest of France. Joined the monastery there, became later on abbot, and then he died as Archbishop of Canterbury. This is European culture. And we are far behind of such a unity, and I hope that Christianity could create someday a similar unity in Europe, but not only in Europe, but all over the world. Our Benedictine monastery, that we should be like small lamps bringing this light everywhere.
I mentioned European culture also in terms of, for example, literature. Benedict quotes from all kinds of literary figures, like Dante, for example, very often.
Yeah, we have literature nationally, like also Goethe on the other, or Molière. These are, would say, national or somehow national poets who have had an influence all over Europe. And we should not forget, really, whereas in the United States, for example, we have just one culture. And for them, it may be hard to understand the Europeans, because we have so many cultures in Europe. In spite of a certain common culture, nevertheless, we have very different cultures. Between France and Germany, there's a big difference, I would say. Although we understand each other far better now, but the mentality, l'esprit français, that's something different from the German romantics, for example, or the German nature.
Being as we're talking about culture, now, I know that you yourself are a musician. You spoke about the Pope's document, the apostolic exhortation, post-synodal exhortation on the Eucharist, in which you said there was a bit of a catechism in a sense. No, there was a catechetic teaching. He mentions music there. I know that you play the guitar in a rock band. Pope Benedict spoke about music a lot in that. There was a particular section in which he spoke about Gregorian chant.
I was choir master of Gregorian chant at Sant' Anselmo for 4 years. We even produced a disc called Jubilate Deo. It is the minimum of Gregorian chant, of a repertoire of Gregorian chant all people should know all around the world. And this is really what the Pope means also. For international gatherings, we should have some common music also.
Like an identity.
Like an identity. And we should not forget our brothers of Thésée and the youngsters at Thésée. They have started with Latin songs already 2 or 3 decades ago. So it's nothing new. Why should only English or Italian be the church, the language of the church? The language of the church for centuries has been Latin. But this doesn't mean that we should do everything in Latin. It's just for major assemblies, gatherings, the Pope wants to have Latin. Of course, the Pope would never allow a rock band to play during during Mass, and I would not even come with a rock band to Mass. I would say it's for the disco or for some other place. It's for entertainment, but it's not as a composition meant for the Holy Eucharist. And I can also tell you why, because in rock music, the individualists, the players, the singers, they are very important. Whereas in church, you are not important. Christ only is important.
From what you've said, Pope Benedict has this desire for clarity in the church. Even this idea of identity in terms of music is clarity. If you had to define Pope Benedict with three adjectives, what would they be? Would one be a clarity of thought, or would it be, I don't know, can I prompt, deliberate, thoughtful?
Clarity, yes, but also love for the people and very Christologically minded, very Christ-centered.
He has two major writings in these 2 years, an encyclical, Deus Caritas Est, God is Love, and the post-synodal exhortation we've just been speaking about. Both these titles have the word love in them.
Yes, he wants to insist very much, and maybe because he's German, in Germany, the church has the image of being an institution of forbidding everything, what is beautiful. And you see, just you shouldn't do. And God is the judge and so on. God is writing down all your sins, starting from eating too much or and drinking too much, to every those minor things. And Pope Benedict wanted to give a new image, to say simply, don't forget, God first of all is love.
So is that his greatest achievement, do you think, as Pope?
I'm sure. And this was the big surprise he created among people, because everybody thought he would now give a small and detailed thing. No, a detailed discussion. He simply showed God is love.
You were listening there to the Abbot Primate of the Order of St. Benedict, Notke Wolf. Thanks for listening. I'm Veronica Scaresbrick.